Public debt for public good is the subject today. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Well, we've had Dan Fauske on before. He's the head of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now, and at least for the time being, he's head of the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, and he may get to be in charge of the Kinnick Island Bridge and Toll Authority. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, 550-8422, a local call on Anchorage, email talkalaskapublic.org.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business and welcomes students from across Alaska. Online degree programs and courses prepare students for professional careers or can be applied to your current career. Explore the options online at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Okay, well, telephone number once again, 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, and people already chiming in by email to talk to the ever-popular Dan Fauske. I mean, what other state would have some guy in charge of a bond issue is as popular as Dan that the legislature wants to give the gas line to, wants to give the toll bridge to? What is it, Dan Fauske, that makes you so attractive?
Wow. Who knew? Well, thank you for the very generous intro and having me. I'd like to point out that I'm also in charge of yard work and other unsavory tasks that arrive at my home when my wife assigns them to me. So it's not all real glorious. I always like to start off by saying that I've been fortunate to lead a corporation that has one of the best teams in America, and that's been recognized that way. And I know Mark Romick, sitting here to my right, Director of Planning, is one of the key members of the team. So we've had a great deal of success, but it hasn't been just me. It's been a great – I'm a team. I like having teams. I like putting people together and giving them freedom to explore ideas. And there's an entrepreneurial spirit at AHFC. We are a business, and we like to operate that way. And so through the years – we've had a lot of success, and we've kind of become recognized as the ability to get things done, or at least tackle it, and to give straight up answers to legislators and other public officials, or the citizens of the state, and just say this is how it is, and this is how we see it, and this is what we believe you should do.
Well, to go back to one program here, and I guess before we go any further, let's welcome Mark Romick to the program. Mark, welcome to Talk of Alaska. It's good to have you here.
I'm here for the color commentary.
Well, just chime in when any place you see needs a little color put in there. You just go ahead. We may need it. I remember some years ago when the home energy rebate program was started. That was yours, right?
It was. For years, Alaska Housing had done weatherization on people at 60% of median income or under. And we'd get $1 million maybe from the federal government, and we'd put in $1 million of our own, or, you know, kind of a matching. And folks did a great job. We had to stage or stagger the work because there was never enough to do a complete village or town. And then a number of years ago, in working with Senator Hoffman, who had asked to see me, and it was his desire to, if we could put together a much larger program with some state funding to try and really ease the situation. You know, it was kind of always our belief, it doesn't matter what energy you use, you should be using less of it, if at all possible.
Amen.
And I think that program is one of the just outstanding successes of the people of the state. AHFC has been blessed with managing it. I'm very proud of the people that we put on. We ramped it up in remarkably short period of time with energy raters who are private contractors, not employees of the corporation. We gave our word to the legislature that we wouldn't build a huge infrastructure bureaucracy. We brought on just a handful of people to work within the building, and the rest is done through private contractors. And I think the numbers speak for themselves. It's had such a major impact. And so at that time, Senator Hoffman had proposed $300 million. And then a few short months after, before we really even got geared up, they put another $60 million into the program. We divided the monies out between home energy rebate, which is people at 100% of median income or above, or excuse me, or below, and above 100% of median income was weatherization. Basically the same work, a few different nuances to it. But it's just been unbelievably successful, and the numbers are just staggering. And it's, again, nationally recognized. And we've had discussions with the Federal Department of Energy and other states. We've had people go brief other states and entities as to how we do it. And so
how was the problem solved of getting people to, I mean, you can't really have somebody qualified to do the blow test and all that stuff that a person has to pay for to even start with the program. You can't be, I mean, it's just not going to be cost effective to have every single village in Alaska have one of those people in it. So how has that worked out?
Well, it's great. I think at the time we started it, we had 20-some energy raters around the state. And there had been more, but then it was always driven by funding. You know, people have to make a living. And now we're up around 125, I believe, is the number. I commend the industry for gearing up. You know, we test the raters, and through our resources and people, they get certified, and now you've seen a lot of businesses start up where I've seen a lot of young couples and others that have gotten into this business. In areas where there aren't energy raters, we've developed a system, again, thanks to the industry, where people that aren't busy in a particular will go out to some more of the remote areas of the state and spend some time and get homes rated and as part of their contractual relationship.
Yeah. And it's essentially the program is there's still more people want this than the money's available for, and the legislature is subject to appropriation. Is that how it works?
That is correct. And in this year's budget, I just want to get my glasses on here, but another, it was right at around $50 million was put in, a little bit over $50 million, and 30 of it will go towards weatherization and 20 will go towards the rebate program.
Oh, okay.
That's the exact, but it's... again, that bill needs to be signed, but I'm assuming it will be. It was agreed upon by legislators and submitted to the governor. And so it's proceeding now. That makes us pretty valid out through a little after March of next year. But again, it's back into the funding cycle and to go back. It's so popular that to legislators' credit, there's always a discussion. The governor was put it in his capital budget request this year. And then throughout it's happened the last several legislative sessions where legislators are very interested in the project. It's got extreme benefit for not only urban or rural, but urban areas. And so funding has always been easy in the sense that it's working so well that people are anxious to get money because it's achieving the desired results that we wanted.
And the desired results is to consume less energy and cost people less. And have less fuel costs.
Correct.
And, you know, it's actually happening.
It is, Steve. It also increases the life of the home because some of the fixes that go in. So you've enhanced people's quality of life, and you've extended the value of their home, thus increasing the value of that home. At the same time, you're saving energy. So it's a win-win all the way down the line.
Well, the calls are already starting to come in for you because you've been involved with the gas line thing. I think we expect that to come up, so I want to get that set up. But first, I want to go to this closing cost program that is new with AHFC. And this is as I understand it, that it's actually possible to get your closing costs financed now for your housing.
It is. We've been struggling of late with. Trying to figure out a way to what is our niche from the financial market perspective or the ability to generate capital. It's been very difficult bumping up against federal fiscal policy. We're renowned in the industry, and our credit ratings show it as our ability to understand the markets and operate within them. But we continually are back and trying to put deals together, and we'll do a successful $100 million or $250 million obligation, and it seems like we always come up an eighth short or whatever in reference to what federal monies that are being funneled into Fannie Mae and Freddie and other devices to be competitive. Now, I take exception with some of that. I think not out of a territorial or a jealous spat. I have real questions on some of the federal fiscal policy that's going on, and I think the federal government was lacking. HFC is unique, but there's housing finance corporations all over the country that have been sitting at the sidelines during this whole time because they couldn't gain. They get their money through the Wall Street, and so you took this incredible tool out of your toolbox and threw it away. It's starting to come back. Now, what our closing cost assistance is designed at already previously, they would have qualified anyway for a mortgage. And what we're doing is that by paying a slightly higher interest rate, they'll run it about, I want to make sure I get this correct.
There are people listening and want to know exactly.
It's 3%. 3% of the total cost of the mortgage can be directed towards the homeowner to assist in closing costs, not down payment assistance, but the costs associated with housing.
Down payment would be over the line.
Yeah, but these are people that with a minimum credit score of 640 that have an opportunity to say, well, what's in my best interest here? You know, do I want to accept an eighth of a point lower in interest rate? Or do I want to get some cash up front to help with some of these costs, knowing that over the life of the loan, that eighth of a point is not that significant? If, in fact, they choose that position, then we're rolling these up into mortgage-backed securities, dealing with one of our investment bankers, and then the money is returned to HFC through the sale of those mortgage-backed, because the credit scores are very high. Or not very, but this is good quality credit, and so it's worth... It has a value with mortgage bankers as they roll these mortgage-backed securities into pools and sell them, unlike what occurred in the past where they were taking substandard loans and pooling them up. We all saw the results and the disaster that ensued from that type of activity. So we're very hopeful that this program will help staunch the loss of our portfolio as people continue to refi. We don't moan about it. We just say we need to get more competitive, but we're not going to be frivolous or careless with our assets and the people's money, if you will. And so I think this program's got some real potential. The other area where we got hit extremely hard was HFC has a lot of cash, but it has to have a lot of cash because that's how we function. We buy mortgages and then recycle that debt continually. And so our earnings have always been based on short-term interest rates. At any given time, we could have $800-900 million in the bank short term because we have to draw on those funds to purchase those mortgages from the banks and our partners. And we went from earning 4 and 5 percentage points on that money down to 10 basis points or 0.1%. So a couple of times we took 50, 60 and up million dollar hits just on interest earnings, which was money that we normally use to help support the social operations of the corporation, a lot of these funds in our capital budget. And that'll fix itself over time. But as long as the Federal Reserve and others have the policies in place that they do to keep interest rates so low, it's going to be a little difficult. But we're making it along.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Crazy times we're in.
It is. But we avoided. This is the end result of national policy. We here in this state, Alaska Housing in particular, intentionally stayed out of that market. We were asked to get into it. We were pressured pretty hard by some that we were missing the boat, and we had made a decision, no, we're just not going there. And so you get praised on the one hand for not doing it, which we deserved. It was the right thing to do. But on the other hand, as a country rights itself, this is just one of the prices you have to pay while the financial markets are still adjusting.
Well, we didn't really have any kind of housing bubble in Alaska, did we?
No, we did not have the spec building. Yet some people got themselves in trouble with online.
But I mean, our bubble was the post pipeline thing that
correct.
Put all the banks out of business.
Correct. And we also have seen historical norms for foreclosure rates and delinquency. It's right within a spectrum that you don't want to see any of it, but if you're going to have it, you want it in an operational range that you can deal with. And we've never left that. In fact, it's just remained constant.
Well, yeah, I'm going to turn to the gas line issue now. What you know, I'm sure there's listeners that say, you know, why in the world did the legislature give the bullet line to Dan Fauske? And you, I'm not expecting you to answer that, but essentially, it's a question of management of handling the money.
Correct.
And what you've done to this point with the gas line bullet line scheme is to figure out what the design ought to be and how it could be financed, and then presented it. I mean, that's where we are at this point.
Correct.
Right?
Let's go back about three and a half years. The legislature, the bipartisan in-state gas line caucus, which was just the majority of members, voted on almost unanimously, I think it was, to create a team. And they wanted me to head the team. And the job of the team was to deliver by July 1st, 2011, a report showing the viability or the potential for building a gas line and how it could be financed and was it doable. And we showed that it was. When I entered the project, I was very skeptical, thinking the state would have to put up $2, $3 billion. That's based primarily on the distance covered to go get the gas. Plus, we have a small population in this state when you start factoring in billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar projects. I was very pleased to report that we didn't arrive at that conclusion. One of our benchmarks became, if you can't deliver this gas at a price that beats or is below imported LNG, then it's a fool's errand. And we were able to do that by a substantial margin. So then it gave impetus to the creation of HB 369, which created AGDC within HFC to continue on with the work of designing this pipeline, and we've had a great deal of success in doing this.
And you spent that, so now there's more money.
Well, the deal was, and I want this is important for people to understand. There have been those that have said, "Well, the state will be on the hook for $7.5 billion." I get frustrated at those comments because if people that are saying it know the real answer, then they're intentionally deceiving people. And if they don't understand it, they should call me because. This is a revenue bond scenario structured, not entirely different from mortgage revenue bonds. All of the debt of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, which is $3 billion in that range, none of it's a debt of the state of Alaska. It's solely owned debt of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. If under the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, we get to the point of sanctioning a project, it'll be bonds issued by that entity. And the investors will understand it very clearly that this is a bond. The underlying credit of the project is the project. If you have long-term transportation commitments and all the deals in place, which is selling bonds would be the last thing you do. You're going to have all these long-term. And in the gas business, these are 20, 25-year contracts. That's what the investor looks at because it's the ability to show that the debt can be paid. And it'll be debt issued based on that concept. So it's not a debt of the people of the state of Alaska. It's okay. Not a general obligation of the state or any of those things.
Okay. Let's go to gas price. Competitive, you said, with the price of importing. So what would that run to, like 15 or so?
Right now, currently, in the NSTAR market here in the South Central Alaska, we're paying about $9.40 per MCF, 1,000 cubic feet, MMFCF, 1,000 cubic feet, million BTU.
right. Really confusing.
Well, let's just keep it at 1,000 cubic feet. In the project that we've designed at plus or minus 30%, and I want to clear that up, as we progress this project through, that percentage comes down, and you go through this stage-gated approach. Whereas we went through FEL1, which is front-end loaded one. We're now into two. And as you move it on out, you have positions or conditions all along the way that if this thing does not make any sense, you shut it down. So there's benchmarks that you're trying to achieve. The ideal situation is you get it down to a plus or minus 10% and then look at sanctioning the project. Now, this is a $7.2 to $7.5 billion project that if completed on time, which we have no reason to believe it won't, is going to deliver gas to Fairbanks in the $8 to $10 price range. And there's some variables in there for that 1,000 cubic feet. right now in Fairbanks for trucked gas from Big Lake. Where Fairbanks Natural Gas Corporation trucks gas up to Fairbanks, where they have about 1,000, 1,100 customers. They're paying $23.33 for that same equivalent. So
I thought Japan was bad. They're paying about 17. These guys are paying 23.
Well, and then if you convert that to heating oil, it's Fairbanks is getting pounded, as we know. And I think if you watch this last legislative session, our brethren in rural Alaska are going, welcome to our world. However, as tragic it is in rural Alaska, and we're working on that, you now have a situation where your second largest city is really involved in an economic situation that is absolutely not sustainable. And I've even had, I spent a lot of time in rural Alaska, and I've had some real good friends and Native leaders and others that have said, if you think it's bad in rural now, you let this continue in your urban areas, because it's just that domino effect. It just gets worse and worse. So you ended up with a problem that needed to be rectified. That same project that we're working on currently shows gas coming into Alaska or Anchorage at about the $9 to $11 range. And so there's a proximity here of closer to the source, so there's a drop for the Fairbanks folks. One of the things that helped it was when we went away from, we originally were at a 24-inch, 2,500 PSI line where you were hauling liquids in the line, and liquids are all your butanes, propanes, ethanes, all the thanes. And what you need to get it to is methane, which is utility-grade gas. Those liquids are valuable, but what we learned, and we did conducted three extensive studies on LNGs, liquefied natural gas, NGLs, which are natural gas liquids, where you take natural gas and convert it into diesel or jet fuel, and GTLs, and then NGLs. NGLs, GTLs are the conversion. NGLs are the thanes, the ethanes, the butanes, the propanes, and the rest. Ethane, for one, is an example where it's utilized to form and make plastics. Our studies were done, and though we didn't close the door on any of them, we said a couple years ago that LNG was the most likely product to be successful in any kind of export activity or whatever. And I think we proved to be correct on that if you look at all the work that's been done since. We then made the determination that, look, let's optimize this line. We had the EIS. We had developed the environmental impact statement, which we had, and we looked at the fact that if we were to do a change, it would involve an amendment to the EIS, which is not critical. Just you'd have to go back to the federal government and show it. But this had some real merit to it, because under the old situation, to convert that natural gas, that liquid gas, or that natural gas with all the liquids in it, required the construction of a $250 million straddle plant out in Dunbar, Alaska, about 37 miles from Fairbanks. $250 million to pull those liquids off, to ship pure methane on a 12-inch lateral into Fairbanks. You also had additional compressor stations, because you need to get to compress that gas into keeping a liquid form, or to transfer to liquids.
The numbers are getting dancing around in my head. The bottom line then would be that even though these liquids are quite valuable and could even be a source for like propane and go up and down the Yukon River, when you actually take into account the cost of the infrastructure involved with this,
correct,
it don't pencil out.
So what we ended up doing, and there were people frustrated with that, but there's a couple of things that happened.
Yeah, I bet they were frustrated.
Well, you look at what happened with shale.
Yeah.
Shale gas. There is so much gas now in the market that when you look at your industry in the lower 48, they're actually shutting plants down. There's just so much what they call feedstock. So what we wanted to do was concentrate our efforts on keeping, the primary mission of HB 369, get gas to Alaskans at the lowest possible cost. We then optimized the line. We went from a 24-inch 2,500 PSI, and we took it up to 36-inch. Again, remember, we're limited to 500 million feet of gas a day under the AGEA contract. So we went to 500, staying at the 500 million feet a day at a compression of about 1,400 PSI, but we pulled the liquids out. We'll do that up on the North Slope, and now you're hauling basically pure methane with a 1.5% propane piece in it, which equates to about 3,900 barrels a day of propane, taking into consideration if we can create a market, or if there's a market out there that we can attach ourselves to or create for that trips down the Richardson Highway or the Yukon, we're going to have that available to us. And in doing that, you got rid of the straddle plants. You were able to relieve yourself of a compressor station. So you maximized or optimized the line and stayed within the same cost parameters that we'd originally established. Prior to this, and I was always so proud of all these communities up and down the route, they supported this project whole lot, even though they weren't going to get gas. Mm-hmm. They just said it's good for the state. Now with the optimization, Clear and Willow and Talkeetna and Nanan and all these communities up and down the road will be able to tap into the line at a marginal rate.
Well, how about taking some calls?
Sure.
All right. Let's go to Bob, joins the program from Soldotna. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dan Fowsky, Bob.
Good morning. Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
Dan, you're probably one of the most intelligent men I've ever listened to. You wear many hats, and, you know, several years ago, I was talking with an old friend of mine in Team Terrio when I grew up together, you know, and I was thinking about the energy problem we have in the state, and I thought about what we learned in school about the Tennessee Valley Authority, and I said, why don't they create something like that in Alaska? Well, I guess that's become the Pipeline Authority. Sir, I'm also a man of many hats. I've learned to work with my hands all my life. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and I need a job. You know, I'm a carpenter, I'm a plumber, I'm a pipe fitter, I'm a painter, and I also took classes through developmental workplace weatherization. I have a certificate in that. I'm willing to travel. I live here in Soldotna. I'm working at a minimum wage job now, and if I can't find a better job, I won't be able to pay my property taxes, and I'm going to lose my home, which needs an energy audit, matter of fact.
Bob, I'm sure you don't have the $10,000.
Bob,
I don't. But where can a person I have a lot of lifelong skills. Like I say, you know, my dad was having me stuff insulation in cracks when I was a little kid back in the 60s, you know. And
Bob,
I need a job, sir. Where can I go? What can you direct me in any direction or give me a number to call maybe that somebody might be able to help me out? I'm willing to work hard and I can travel. I am a lifelong Alaskan. I see a lot of contractors come up here from the lower 48, and they bring up their own crews with them.
All right, Bob. I feel your pain.
Bob, here, I'm gonna give you a number. I know some of my folks at work are listening. I'm going to give you a number to my office, 330-8449.
330-8449. 330-8449.
Yeah, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you in touch with our weatherization folks. You mentioned you had your weatherization certificate, and
yes.
I'd like you to have a chance to visit with those folks. As I mentioned to Steve, more money has come into that program, and there might be an avenue there where you could get some information from, and I would probably put you in touch with the guys running that for us, John Anderson, and go through the drills as to who could you be put in touch with and who could you go talk to.
Okay. That was 330-8449.
Yeah, all right. Let me give you one other number, and that's John's number. It's 330-8155. And I know Mike Buller, my deputy director, is listening, and maybe we could give John's a heads up that you're going to be giving him a call and see if we can't get you some direction as to where you could go with your skills. A little bit longer term, if this pipeline goes, that's going to be 15,000 jobs, and these are going to be major jobs. If you, this is going to be the largest project in North America if it goes, and there's going to be that's going to be an opportunity you're not going to want to miss if you have the opportunity.
Well, I wish you the best of luck, and like I say, you've got, I mean, the information, the knowledge you have in your head, I'm just amazed at what you got going there, Dan, and I thank you so much.
Bob, could you call my wife and let her know, give her this opinion? Let me know how that works out for you.
Your evaluation coming up soon.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
It's very, very heartfelt, and I will tell you personally that Dan will pick up the phone. Let's go to Charlotte, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Charlotte.
Hi, thank you. I was listening earlier, and I heard you guys mention the closing cost assistance program. I'm currently starting to look for a house. I just moved up here from from down in the lower 48, and I had kind of heard something about it, and it's been a little bit of talk. So I was wondering if there's a place I could find more information on it.
Okay. Now, you do have a menu of options, and this is just part of the option involving AHFC. So we'll start with that.
Well, the closing cost assistance, I would recommend you get a hold of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I might have Mark jump in here on the home choice class and stuff. Mark, if you could maybe...
Sure. If you call our main number, 338-6100, and ask for the underwriter of the day, they can give you some information about the closing cost assistance program. And I believe we also have stuff on our website, www.ahfc.us. But as Dan indicated, the best place to start to find out about buying a home in Alaska is with Alaska Housing's Home Choice Program, which is a free day-long training on the ins and outs of buying a home in Alaska, the financing options that you have available through Alaska Housing, as well as under lenders, and where you can get a lot of information about Closing Cost Assistance Program and the other financing programs that HFC has. And
we also, was it Charlotte?
Yeah, Charlotte.
We also, we reimburse people on some of the fees that they would pay for attending the class. And I think you're going to enjoy the class. Most people mm-hmm. think you know a lot about buying, or you think you do, and I think you're going to enjoy the class. Most people, we've had thousands of people take it, and they come away going, man, I learned an awful lot in there.
This is in Anchorage.
Yeah, it's in Anchorage.
And how often do they happen?
I think this is Mark. They schedule them as people sign up, and I believe you can sign up online so that you don't, so it's more efficient in case you want to do it at the middle of the night.
And we do give them all over the state, but I believe Charlotte lives here in Anchorage, so it'll probably be her. But that's what we would recommend, Charlotte.
Okay, so start with the home choice class, and then in there I can learn a little bit more about that.
You can learn, and as Mark said, when you get the underwriter of the day, when you call in, you can also get some more immediate information just on some questions you might have on how that program's going to work, who the underwriter is or who the bank lender is, and give you the best direction to go in. We'd like to help you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Charlotte, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage of state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com. Start a second career, earn a Master's of Arts and teaching degree from the University of Alaska Southeast, from home or on campus. Registration information at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast.
Our guest is Dan Fauske, Executive Director of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and also the Planning Director of AHFC, Mark Romick. And we're just going through what happens there at the AHFC, because it's got such a huge portfolio these days. And one of the things that is in Dan's responsibilities that he's been talking about is the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, which we had a pretty nice explication of here just a short time ago. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. And the current status of the gas line thing is that a new House Bill 4 has been passed, creates an independent authority to take care of all this, and you wouldn't necessarily even be involved anymore, right?
Well, that's potential, certainly. In HB 4, the bill creates – AGDC has already been created. It's a subsidiary of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Exactly, yeah.
What this bill does is it moves it out into commerce as a standalone independent corporation that, you know, the governor, I would assume, you know, is going to, you know, eventually sign the bill, I do believe. I have not heard of any problems, and he was a good supporter. And in that bill, there's a new board created. I view it as kind of what will be a high-powered board of probably some professionals that – from around the state that work in this type of business. And then the board will select an executive director. And so people have asked me, well, what are you going to do? Well, it's presumptuous of me to say, well, I'm going to do something. One, the bill hasn't been signed. And two, there's some protocol there that needs to be administered. I like the idea of the separate corporation. I think the sponsors of the bill, Chairman or Speaker Hawker, Speaker Chenault and Chairman Hawker, were pretty forward-thinking in regards to patterning it somewhat, like at the Wyoming Gas Line Authority. North Dakota has done a similar thing after what they've gone through in their state. And in the bill, it got pretty inclusive as they want to create this entity that not just for this project, but as we move forward and looking more towards our rural brethren and other areas, to have an entity that's what they do as they figure these things out. We've got a lot of mining interests in this state that if they could get natural gas or cheaper energy to them, as you branch that line out, when you have an anchor tenant, for instance, like a Donlin Creek, if you could get it or something else, you start getting closer and closer or within reach of native areas or rural areas of the state where if we could start getting this gas out. It was a desire of the legislature to have that propane component in there. And so this corporation has also been charged with actively pursuing these other ideas to see what we can do about getting, some of these vast resources we have off to our fellow citizens. And so I think it's an exciting time, and I'm happy and proud of what the state's doing in regards to kind of taking the bull by the horns.
And a lot's going to hang on this board. This hopefully we'll get some really good appointments to this board. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. To jump back to housing, from Sarah by email at talk@alaskapublic.org. Sarah says, I wanted to ask Dan, what if I don't have the $10,000 for the upfront energy rebate costs?
Well, that's been an ongoing issue that we have kicked around a couple times. And what we ran up against was, and at one time there was a bill, not this last legislative session, but two sessions ago, where it was discussed as to how can we assist people in getting the money. We were even kicking around the idea of a 0% loan that we could give. It gets difficult when we start writing checks to people without any results, paying the upfront costs out front. We haven't given up on it, and you're not alone in your concern, Sarah.
Oh, no. But I know lots of people that got that problem.
But Alaska Housing also has the home improvement loans that they do at a good, reasonable cost. And we're seeing residents. And you ought to come in and visit with someone and see what some of your options are. You might be surprised at what you have access to that you're just not aware of at this point.
And there is a, a weatherization thing, right?
There absolutely is. And I don't know her particular circumstances, if it's what her income is, but she might qualify for the weatherization where she doesn't have to come up with that cash infusion. Or if she does, then there might be other ways that we can assist her to get her into the program. Because the beauty of this is when it works, and it helps people immensely from a cash flow standpoint. They're paying out less energy money for their energy, and that means more money in your pocket and the ability to service a small loan if you needed to get this work done.
Well, I couldn't believe it. I mean, we got it at our house, and I can brag about my gas bill now. I can brag about it. In the dead of winter, I can brag about it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it just makes you feel good. I've had more people come up to me, whether it's in June or even the grocery store, and just said, it just changed everything for their family or whatnot. They just, the average... The average rebate right now is running about $6,400. The average expenditure is $10,000.
Right.
That additional $4,000, when you factor it in, equates to about, I think it's $23 or $24 million has flowed into the economy. The average rebate is running about $1,600. So it's like getting another permanent fund check. And then the payoff on that note or that rebate is running about, a little bit under 3 or 3 years, where it's you've received back in kind energy savings that equal the amount of money that you put out. It's just, for anybody, it's just the best bang for the buck you'll ever see. It's been funded up again. And then on the other side is weatherization, which has good, adequate funding. Accomplishes the same task, but a little bit different format for people to get involved. So...
Okay, let's go to Robert. Joins the program from Esther, Alaska. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dan Fauske. Robert?
Hey, Dan, how's it going?
It's good.
This is Bob Grove, Doc.
Well, hi, Bob.
I promised myself I would not ask you to explain how arbitrage works. Anyway, I've been following along here, and I just couldn't help call in, seeing how it's. We had 4 inches of snow here this morning, and it's been rumored that AHSC has canceled summer spring. Seriously, I wanted to chime in about several people who obviously know I've been involved with the corporation and weatherization program have asked me, why AHSC? And I think that the stars and the planets kind of started lining up about 1995 when you became CEO down there. And basically, the time that I was involved with the board was very, very exciting in the sense that we, all of us, your staff, you included, obviously, became very innovative of how to leverage every possible angle to increase the ownership of homes for people who absolutely fit all the boxes but couldn't come up with closing costs, couldn't basically afford to either build a new house or buy one. But we came up with a means of doing that. And I'm thinking back about how far AHSC and the state has come since the 80s when I was in the legislature working and trying to convince legislators to enact the weatherization program, and then later on the five-star program, when fuel oil was 65 cents a gallon. And, of course, it wasn't 65 cents a gallon out in the rural bush areas, as you're well aware, because you lived out there. But I just wanted to answer the question on the air as far as why AHSC. And you may have already mentioned this about how the AHSC in the state of Alaska was at the table during the tobacco settlement. And who did they go to set up a subsidiary corporation for Alaska to get one of the largest parts of that, because they were at the table negotiating, and how we set up a tobacco securitization corporation, which is an arm's length corporation similar to where you're going with the Gasland Authority, and how that money came into the state, and how that also ended up changing a lot of people's lives. So anyway, I just wanted to say, I'm really glad I tuned into the radio this morning, because it made a rather depressing day a very interesting and exciting day.
Well, thank you, Bob. And Bob Grove was on our board for a number of years. Great guy, great board member, and lives, of course, up in Esther near Fairbanks. And I think we're getting snow here today. We're down in a room with no windows, but I was told we're getting it here. I agree with your depressing. It's getting to be a bit much. What's May 1st tomorrow, or it's getting pretty close here?
Yeah. And by the way, I could see Elaine's eyes rolling when that comment was made about the smartest man in the world.
Yeah. I've got a wonderful wife and married a long time, but I'm sure I'll hear about it when I get home. So.
Anyway, we're behind you up here. There's a lot of stuff going on with gas in Fairbanks right now. It's really exciting. Things are changing every day. Back in, I think it was 1972, I went to Earl Roman's battery shop, and unfortunately he passed away here this last year, and he had actually plumbed his shop there on the Old Rich for natural gas in 1972. And so, yeah, we've been talking about this
That's
for
a
while. And just to follow up, and I'll stop as far as YHFC, it's the ability, in my opinion, and I'm pretty prejudiced, to come up with the financial angle to build anything. We've come a long way, Dan, since back in 95 when we were trying to convince the legislature not to take that seed money that started AHFC and go patch potholes along the highway, which did happen to the Alaska Science and Technology Fund, as you remember.
I remember it well.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, on that, keep up the good work, and we're 100% behind you up here in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate the call. It's nice to hear your voice. I haven't talked to you in a little while.
I always enjoy those kind of interactions on this show. And Bob, I want to thank you for telling the story about the tobacco fund, too. It's yet another hat you wore,
yeah.
Dan Fowsky.
That was a fun deal to put together. We were one of the first states, and in fact, I believe we still held the record for the cheapest, or the not cheapest, lowest closing costs associated with as you put bond deals together. But we hit that market. I'd been asked the question, the annual settlement when the 50 attorney generals from across the country sued, and it's a variable, not a variable, but it fluctuates depending on the earnings of the tobacco industry. But the average was going to be about, I think, 20 or 25 million per year would flow into the state. And so I had said I would securitize that. I'd sell bonds behind it, treat it as a windfall, because at that time the state coffers were pretty bleak. HFC was about the only game in town in terms of capital budget. And this represented the ability to sell bonds up front, take advantage of that one-time opportunity, get about $300 million in cash, and that's what they ended up doing. And we created Northern Tobacco Securitization, a subsidiary of the corporation. That's a great example because those are bonds of that corporation. And that market's been in flux here recently, but the investors knew that when they went in, and you negotiate those deals. So great example of what can be done to assist across the state in areas. And that money primarily went for rural schools construction. So it was just great, great, great expense.
Our phone number 1-800-478-8255 in our remaining 10, 12 minutes here with Dan Fowsky as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com.
Talk of Alaska, and if anybody can make the subject of bonds interesting, it's Dan Fowsky. We got one here from AJ in Talkeetna. It's not really anything that you have any control over at all here, Dan, but he wanted to remind our listeners, AJ did. He said, look, you know, the energy rebate can mess with your tax return. You do get a 1099 out of it, and that is your income. You do have to pay taxes on that. There's not a thing the state can do about that.
No, I'm glad AJ said something. I remember a number of years ago that a caller came in and he was asking what I could do to change tax code. And I said, if I could get that done, it'd put a little crown on my head. And I just said, you know, there's nothing you can do about the fact. And I think we've stretched it as far as we could in working with the federal government. On the weatherization angle, too, as far as 100% of median. And the feds, I thought, were, because that's controlled by the IRS and others as to what you can give people without finally reaching a point where that's viewed as a gift. But I'll guarantee you, even with the tax benefit, or the tax, I won't call it a benefit, but the tax issue at hand, you're still money ahead using this program. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those, you lump it and pay your taxes, but at the end of the day, you've come out ahead utilizing this program. And so
let's go to Sean, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Sean.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Great.
Hey, I had a question for Dan here. With all this talk about the gas line and all that, it sounds like HFC is kind of getting involved in things that don't really have a lot to do with housing. And I was going to ask if it feels like HFC is getting away from its core mission, and I can take my answer off the air.
All right. Yeah, this came up a little bit at the beginning. But
Sean, I appreciate that comment. I remember when we took this on, there was a concern by legislators that we were going to get stretched too thin or that I was going to get stretched too thin, and I assured them that I would not allow that to happen, and that also that there's a team at HFC where I went to my team members as well, and we talked about the fact of some additional responsibilities. And for those that were actively involved, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't taking on something that would affect them too dramatically. We are very cognizant of your question and your concern, Sean, and we would not allow it to happen. It's going to be interesting to see what goes forward now as this separate corporation has been created, and how do we proceed. It'll be removed from HFC, which will – one of the benefits AGDC had during its creation, or this last period when we were finalizing the report, which then turned into HB4 that came out of the legislature this year, was that AGDC was able to draw on the expertise of AHFC for IT work, personnel, procurement, and some other things. And the corporation was vital in assisting getting that done. And it also saved the state money that you didn't have to hire all these people and get it geared up.
So are you saying if you move over, you're going to gut your staff?
Is that no. I'm glad you said that. No, that's not going to happen. But Sean's question is a good one. There's others that have raised that because, and I appreciate that comment, because HFC is a great entity that serves the people of this state well, and people want to make sure it's out there. It gives people a comfort level to know it's there. And I think, Sean, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but there's a lot of people out there, they don't want to see HFC messed with either. It's doing what it's supposed to be doing, and don't upturn the apple cart here.
Home energy rebates and weatherization coming up here. Here's one from Jarek, who says, hey, why is it weatherization focuses on families and not individuals? I feel like I'm having to pay a family planning penalty for being single. Can you explain? Well, I guess this is just your poverty arithmetic, I would think, for weatherization.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that affects him. If he qualified, I don't know that there's a requirement to be married. I've never heard of such a thing.
No, but it's because it's weatherization.
So, well, that's based on
eligibility
income.
On your income and everything. Right?
It's based on income only. Yeah. There are no income restrictions.
Dependents and so forth. No, not specifically.
He might be referring to the fact that it's based on household income. And
correct.
So if you have a family of four, the income limit is higher than if you have a single individual, the income's lower. The limit's lower.
Derek, I apologize for that. We tried to follow some level of federal mandate, and not mandate, but we work with the feds so much as to, feds establish income criteria for the state. We don't do that. And I think they do a reasonably good job at it. And they, from Barrow to Ketchikan, they establish what median income is. And so we factored that in as we consider. Now, I think yourself as a single person, I suppose you do feel penalized to some regard that whatever your income is. But I'd keep checking on it, and if there's a way we can work with you, we'd like to do that. But I think even if you feel you're being penalized, I would imagine the savings would still exceed the penalty that you feel you're paying if you went and had the work done.
Let's go to Connie, joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dan Fauske.
Good morning. Yeah, I was wanted to find out more information because I believe House Bill 35, which was the gas conversion one, did not go through, and wanted to see how the program works or how the energy rebate program works with the conversion things, or if it's just for, with the auditors coming in and checking and, looking at new appliances, because we have pretty old furnace and, heaters and water heaters and stuff in our home. And was just curious, because I don't believe it covers the straight conversions, correct?
Connie, I'm not sure. I think it does. I think if you were to have the energy rater come in, they do the science on your home with the blower door test, and they're going to tell you what your furnace is doing. They're going to tell you where your home's failing.
Well, if I'd have had, I know in mine, that if I'd have had an electric water heater, it would have told me that I'd be better off getting a gas water heater, period.
Yeah.
It would have been covered.
And that's what that program's designed to do.
I'm reading somewhere in there, it talks about that it's not allowed for conversions or something, or?
Strictly for conversions or not by strictly. Itself. Yeah, maybe not strictly.
Okay.
We're
getting lost in the weeds here, I can
well,
tell.
Well, Connie, I would encourage you to call us. Excuse me?
Yeah. Well, I know we've signed up for the rebate. We've got the auditor hopefully coming, soon. We're on the list. I just don't know how long your your list goes, you know, or how quickly it moves through that.
If they're churning out about 125 a week off the list, and I
Whoa.
Think
okay, awesome.
They're going to get a hold of you pretty quick. And you know how to get a hold of me, Connie. If you have a problem, you let me know.
Okay. But, yeah, I mean, I know because, I mean, they're knocking trees down everywhere to, you know, get our gas rolling this way. But we're just trying to look at programs and then, you know, doing the home improvement or the loan program you have.
There's some tools out there for you, Connie. And I'll tell you if I can, my own similar experience when my wife and I did the rebate, but I waited till there were like 5,400 people on the list. I was not going to get busted for or accused of insider trading. But I, when the Energy Raiders showed up, I didn't know these two. There was two young men that did ours, and both my wife and I were just absolutely impressed with their professionalism and the knowledge. And we learned a great deal. I thought I knew a lot about this, but we learned a great deal as they went through the home. And and the things that they said we should do turned out right on the button and did exactly what it was we had expected. And so, I hope you're looking for. We'll get that, you know, get that Energy Raider out there. I think you and your family will be surprised and pleased with what you might learn and what's available for you.
Yeah, and you're just basically at this stage, Connie, you got to clarify your options, I think. It's just, well, all it really is.
And if I may real quickly, yeah. For those that decide they want to go buy what the energy rating will do in terms of Energy Start, you know, as you increase it, people do come in and they borrow additional money. They say, well, look, while they're here, I'm going to go ahead and do...
They can do that?
Yeah. You can. There's an energy home energy improvement loans that we have where people say, as long as I've got workers going on, I'm going to go ahead and do whatever it is they want to do. And they get all the work done at once. And so that's another thing for people to look into.
Wow. Well, you know what? Let's try and get this one in. Steve in Copper Center, quick one for Dan Fauske.
Yeah, I didn't catch what HB4, which way that was going to determine which way the gas line was. And also, we had that energy rating done, and we don't have, propane isn't cheap out here, and neither is heating oil, so I just opted for coal, and I wish there was an allowance for something like that, because I'm heating now with coal, and it works out to about $1.80 a gallon heating oil, and there's no way heating oil and propane are even thought of as competitive out here. Yeah. And I'll take my question off there.
Okay.
Steve, I want to ask my guys when I get back to you. I know we have concessions for wood, wood-burning stoves, and I'm surprised. I want to get one of my folks to tell me what's the problem with coal, because I want to learn a little bit more about that. If we're not allowing for it, or maybe we should be.
Okay. We are running out of time. Right. Dan Fauske, thanks for being with us. Mark Romick, thank you.
Thank you.
Didn't even get to talk about your award.
Another show.
Another show. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, Steve.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Start a meaningful career with a bachelor's degree in elementary or special education from home or on campus from the University of Alaska Southeast. Information at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.